We are getting the holiday weekend, the extended holiday weekend, started early. It is Wednesday night. I am the Solid Monster. This is your AEW Dynamite review as we head into July 4th. Tomorrow, tonight was the beach break episode of Dynamite, the first Dynamite coming out of Forbidden Door this past Sunday. And it was a very focused episode of Dynamite, one of the most focused shows they've done in quite some time, as they began the build to All In at Wembley Stadium, which is their next big pay-per-view coming up at the end of next month. The key matches are coming into focus, but this was an excellent episode of Dynamite tonight. It's the kind of episode of Dynamite that I like to talk about. A lot going on this show. A lot of different things going on. We had a main event tonight for the international title. Will Ospreay, coming off of his loss to Swerve Strickland on Sunday, had to come out tonight and defend his title against Daniel Garcia. They set this match up on the show last week in a segment that also involved MJF. And it looked like this was the beginning of the build to MJF and Ospreay, but where would Garcia fit in? Is he going to be part of this in some way on the march to Wembley? MJF literally extended a challenge to Daniel Garcia to a match at Wembley Stadium, and you had to know that was not going to happen. They were building to something bigger. So tonight, MJF said, you know what, I'm going to be in your corner. And he was out there at ringside for that main event, and that's key. Because of what ended up happening at the very end of that match, where MJF tried to help out Danny Garcia. He believes in this kid so much, he tried to help this kid out, tried to give him a little assist with the Dynamite Diamond Ring, but Daniel Garcia would not accept it. He didn't want to win like that. And he paid the price for it. And when he turned around, he got smashed. And Will Ospreay retains his international title, but that wasn't even the big story coming out of the main event. The big story is what happened when the match was over. And Will Ospreay went to the back. MJF is in the ring with Daniel Garcia. He's being nice to him. This is the MJF that I said I don't want to see anymore. I don't want to see MJF out here being nice to people and saying nice things about people and raising this man's arm. I want him to kick this man in the dick. And that's what he did. He kicked him in the dick. And down goes Daniel Garcia. And we got to see the old MJF. The MJF that was always there, but we really haven't seen him come out in a while. We got the old MJF. The babyface MJF is dead. Long live the old MJF. Long live the scumbag MJF that is the one who really made a name for himself and really got himself over in this company, just being an asshole. And they had an extended beatdown here to close out the show where Daniel Garcia got bloodied, Matt Menard got bloodied. It went on for a long time, and he beat the hell out of this kid until Will Ospreay eventually, finally, came back out, and then MJF retreated into the crowd. It was a very strong angle to close out the show. They had an overrun. They went over by almost 10 minutes tonight. So they had an extended amount of time to let this breathe and to let this play out before they went off the air. But clearly, the direction is going to be MJF and Will Ospreay coming up at Wembley Stadium. We're going to get MJF and Daniel Garcia. I have a feeling that I know when. Or at least I think a good time that they could do that match. I'll talk about that later. But this was a very good angle, and I am very happy. I just talked about this last week. I said, man, this is not the MJF that I want to see. You know, and I'm watching him against Hechicero at fucking Forbidden Door on Sunday. You know, hey, I mean, God bless the guy. He's a good wrestler and all, but that's not the match I wanted to see. I want MJF in there. I want him to be, you know, included in a big story that he can really sink his teeth into. And this is it right here. The battle between two of the biggest stars in the entire company. And up until tonight, I would have said the two biggest baby faces in the entire company. Them and Swerve Strickland. 1, 2, and 3. Not necessarily in that order, but 1, 2, and 3. Well, now you can put MJF in the heel column. In fact, they got two heels back tonight. MJF and Hangman Adam Page. Yeah, the hanger is back. He was the wild card. out there against Jeff Jarrett in the Owen Hart tournament, which is, you know, I don't think a very big surprise. I figured it was Hangman. I've been saying that it was going to be Hangman. Some people were saying, I saw a lot of rumors today on social media talking about Ricochet. It's going to be Ricochet. I'm like, Ricochet? Why? What sense would that make? You're going to put Ricochet in a tournament to lose. Why? Oh, it's going to be Ricochet, or it's going to be, you know, somebody else, because Hangman was suspended by the Elite. Yeah, well, now he's unsuspended. And he's got new music, too. So he's on his way to the finals in due time. He has to get past Jay White first, which he will. And then he'll be on his way to the finals to face who? We'll talk about that, too, because we had two very good semifinal matches in the men's and women's Owen Hart tournament tonight. And we know who's going to the finals, in fact, on the men's side. But I want to go back to MJF for 1 second here, because there are going to be people, because I was already seeing questions about this, who are going to watch this show, they're going to watch this angle, and they're going to say, well, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. Why would they turn MJF when Adam Cole hasn't come back yet? What about Adam Cole? Poor Adam Cole. Why are they throwing the story away? Why wouldn't they throw the story away? Have you seen how that story has played out? They got snake bitten. With injuries, whatever they wanted to do, they weren't able to do it. Adam Cole is obviously not anywhere close to being back yet, to stepping back at a wrestling ring. That's why they wrote him off the way they did at Double or Nothing when MJF came back. He's not coming back anytime soon. He certainly will not be back for Wembley Stadium. MJF, you know, one can't grieve forever. MJF has to move on. MJF is a big enough name and a big enough star that he can't simply, stand around wasting time until Adam Cole is eventually able to come back. So they looked at it and said, okay, let's just write this off. We could always circle back to it in some way down the road if we want to, but we got to move on. We're heading into Wembley Stadium. We're heading into one of our biggest shows, if not our biggest show of the entire year. 50,000 people in Wembley Stadium. What are we going to do with MJF? What is the best role for MJF on this show? And the best role for him is not the pandering babyface. It's not the rah-rah Mr. AEW, look at the tattoo on my leg MJF. It's the MJF that we saw here at the end of the show tonight. That's the version that I wanted to see. Now they've set up a huge match for Wembley Stadium. I don't care about the Undisputed Kingdom. I hope that Adam Cole heals up, and I hope we get him back as soon as possible. And we'll figure out at that point what to do with MJ or what to do with him and Adam Cole, or just what to do with Adam Cole and not even involving MJF. Maybe they'll just ignore it and they'll move beyond it. I don't care. That story was a fail because they couldn't follow up on it in the way that they wanted to. It sucks, but it happens. And now it's time to move on. The Undisputed Kingdom, if you look at the way things played out in the early part of this year with the Undisputed Kingdom and Wardlow, and all those guys, I mean, give me a break. Dead on arrival. So for the people who are going to bring that up, yeah, again, it sucks there was no resolution. Maybe one day there will be. I don't know. It'd be kind of funny if by the time Adam Cole comes back, he's the face and MJF is the heel. But to me, I don't see that as being a big deal. MJF needs to move on. Can't be stuck in purgatory forever waiting for everybody to be healthy because, again, we don't know when he's going to be back. But we did get somebody else back at Forbidden Door. Britt Baker. Adam Cole knows Britt Baker very well. So she came back on Sunday. She made a very brief appearance after Mercedes won the New Japan Strong Women's Championship. She's now a double champion in this company. And that was the first tease for the likely match coming up at Wembley Stadium tonight. It was made all but official when Britt Baker came out to the ring and she cut a promo to talk about where she's been, what's been going on with her. Ultimately, it culminated in Mercedes coming out. We had the face-to-face. We had the back-and-forth. We had the challenge issued for Wembley Stadium. And like I said, it is all but official that Britt Baker and Mercedes will be wrestling later next month. Likely, I assume, for the TBS title. The other big thing, though, with the Britt Baker segment was the pretty shocking revelation as to why she was out for so long. We knew that she had back problems. We knew that going back to the reality show they did, that AEW did there for a while. They did one season of it, All Access, I think it was called. But she had been dealing with a bad back, and even I didn't know the extent of the injury and the herniated discs and all that. I just knew from all the reports that were out there, she was dealing with back issues, and it was pretty bad. And that's all I knew. What we didn't know is what she revealed in this promo tonight. And like I said, it was pretty shocking what she had to say. And so we're going to talk about that as well. But let's look at the landscape here now. You know, now that this episode is over, Forbidden Door is over, now we're heading into All In. Tony Khan is very fortunate because Tony Khan now has three of his biggest names back on the roster in time for his biggest show of the year. MJF was sorely missed. Now we have him back, the real MJF. We have him back. Hangman Page, he's got him back. Britt Baker, he's got her back. She was the face of the women's division for so long. The story writes itself. You have this new woman coming to the roster, claiming the division now as her own, and Britt Baker coming in and saying, oh, wait a minute now. This is my turf. This is my company. I mean, it writes itself. But for him to get these folks back at the same time right now, going into All In, is huge. And you know, the sad thing is, really, the only one that's missing is Kenny Omega. The only thing that would make this perfect was to get Kenny back in time to get the match with Okada for the Continental title at All In. No indication that that's going to happen. I hope I'm wrong. I hope maybe they're going to be in Canada next week. It would be awesome if we had a surprise appearance by Kenny Omega and he said, hey, I'm going to be back in time for Wembley Stadium. I don't think that's going to happen. That sucks. That's a match that should have happened. It was tailor-made for a big show like that. I don't think it's going to happen, but Tony Khan is very fortunate, though, to get these people back all at the same time. Like I said, we had a pair of really good semifinal matches tonight in the Owen Hart tournament. We had the first name reveal for Team AEW in the Blood and Guts match, which is coming up on Dynamite on July 24th. I'm going to tell you who it is. All that, everything that I just mentioned, all of that and no Swerve Strickland, the AEW World Champion, one of the biggest matches of his life, one of the biggest wins of his entire career, a match of the year contender, an incredible main event on Sunday with him and Will Ospreay, big win for him, not on the show tonight. They did say he will be back on Dynamite next week, and that's okay, because if you look at what we had here on the show, there was no obvious spot for him, and the big angle that they shot at the very end didn't involve him. So there really was no need for him to be on the show tonight. He would have just felt kind of thrown out there. And because his next challenger will not be decided until next week in the Owen, it's not like he was going to come out and cut a promo and set up his next program for Wembley Stadium, right? We'll know next week who his opponent is going to be, so it makes more sense for him to be on that show. But again, this was overall, top to bottom, I thought, an excellent episode of Dynamite. It was an episode that they needed here to set the stage for what will be their biggest show of the year. This here is your AEW Dynamite review. It is Wednesday, July 3rd, 2024. It may not be July 4th yet, but happy early Independence Day to those of you who are going to be out and about celebrating tomorrow. This is a fine way to kick off the extended holiday weekend, and I thank you for spending part of it with yours truly. Of course, this will not be the only stream I am doing over this extended holiday weekend. We got one more left to go. Actually, what am I saying? We have two more fucking streams left to go in these next few days. I'm going to be with you on Friday night for SmackDown, and then I'm going to be with you as well on Saturday night because we have Money in the Bank in Toronto. You know, AEW is going to be in Calgary next week. WWE is going to be in Toronto for Money in the Bank on Saturday night. And so after Money in the Bank, you know where to find me. Come on back here. We'll talk about that. All right, let's get into this here. This was the Beach Break episode. Did I mention that? This is the Beach Break episode of Dynamite. We started out with Renee in the back, and she welcomed us to Dynamite and welcomed in Daniel Garcia, joined by Matt Menard. And Garcia said he's no stranger to pressure, but tonight is the most important night of his life. He respects Will Ospreay, but he promises on his mother's life he is not losing this match tonight. Somebody do a welfare check on Mrs. Garcia, please. This man bet on his mother's life that he was going to walk out a winner tonight, and he lost. So if you are Daniel Garcia's mother, or if you know her, if you work with her, maybe keep your distance in these next few days, just in case. You know, it's July 4th tomorrow. Maybe she ought to stay inside. You know, you don't want like a rogue firecracker to, you know, fucking come from out of nowhere. Yeah, when your son's going out there and making statements like this, it worries me a little bit. He respects Will Ospreay. MJF walked in and said he's proud of Garcia, who told him, focus on tonight. Garcia was going to bring up the challenge that MJF made to him for Wembley last week, but MJF cut him off and said, look, you got to focus on your match tonight. Focus on your main event tonight with Will Ospreay. He said, you know what, though? I would like to be in your corner for that match. And Garcia accepted. He walked off. Menard, though, stuck around. And Matt Menard got up in MJF's face and said, look, I was skeptical at first, but then he shook MJF's hand. And again, oh, the mushy stuff here. MJF, you know, I respect you. And he's shaking hands with Matt Menard, please. By the end of the show, this man would be fucking cut from one end of his forehead to the other, bleeding like a pig, the way it should be. Welcome back, Max. Welcome back. Interesting development, though, to open the show, and a nice hook for the main event. Letting you know right away, MJF wants to be in this man's corner. You had to smell a rat. You knew something was afoot at the beginning, so you had to stick around to find out what would happen in the main event. But then it was to the ring for our opening contest, which was a semi-final round match in the Owen Hart Foundation tournament. Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon, hot off of his win over Shingo Takagi at Forbidden Door in an excellent match, one-on-one against the Bastard Pac. This got holy shit chants before they even locked up, before they even touched. These people were chanting holy shit, and even better than that, TBS did not censor these chants. We didn't have holy blank, holy blank. They just let the fans chant holy shit. And here I've had people telling me, well, USA, you know, USA, they do it because they can't. You can't let those chants take place at 8 p.m. on USA. It'd be a violation of something. Give me a fucking break. Thank you, TBS. Thank you. My virgin ears can take the holy shit chants. I'm not going to melt into a puddle. It was nice to hear it without the censoring. This was an excellent match. I know that's going to shock the hell out of all of you, but this was an excellent match. Danielson eked out a win. At one point during the match, he sat Pac down on a chair on the outside. He delivered some yes kicks. Pac intercepted one with a kick of his own. And then he climbed up on top of the barricade by the timekeeper's area, and he just jumped up and dove off with an elbow drop onto Danielson on the ground. Then he put him in the ring. He went up to the top rope, and Pac came all the way off the top with an elbow drop as well. He had a tombstone pile driver, only got a two count out of it, though. There was an avalanche brain buster by Pac, because it would not be a Bryan Danielson match if he wasn't getting dropped on his head and or his neck. Again, Danielson kicked out. Pac went up for the Black Arrow. Danielson rolled out of the way, and then he delivered the Busaiku knee. He went to go pin Pac, who transitioned into the Brutalizer. Danielson escaped, cinched in the lapel lock. Pac escaped into a pin, which Danielson reversed into one of his own for the win. So, great stuff from these two. And they continue to tell the story about whether or not Danielson's body can hold up, you know, for the remainder of the tournament. They've been doing these spots. It happened in the Shingo match, right? That spot where Shingo had him, he basically had his legs propped up on the apron and gave him like a twisting neck breaker on the floor. And the trainer rushed over and the referee, because it looked like he landed right on top of his head. I cringe. Every time this man is dropped on his head, I cringe. Because you forget, you know, he lost over 3 years of his career. There's a reason why WWE wouldn't clear him, and he lost 3 years of his career. But in every single match, he takes the opportunity to land on his neck, to land on his head in just a disgusting way. Part of me is happy, frankly, that he's calling it quits full-time in the next few months. It might be for his own good. But that's the story they're telling with him and his head and his neck. Brian now moves on to the finals, where he would meet the winner of the final quarterfinal match. We had one left later on in the show with Jeff Jarrett and the wild card entry. We'll get to that. Renee was in the back with Willow Nightingale. Willow. Good to see Willow. Willow said that tonight, nothing matters. Smile anyway. The word she lives by, as she could be crying nonstop. She could crawl into a fetal position with all of the things going on in the world right now, but she looks on the bright side. And then she fired up, and she said that she's becoming a two-time Owen Hart Cup winner, going to go on to Wembley Stadium to win the AEW Women's World title. Nothing matters. Smile anyways. She's such a great baby face. She's such a great baby face. And you could hear the people, this was in the back, but you could hear the fans in the arena, like as she was getting fired up, they're getting fired up, and then the closing line here, and they pop huge for her. She's such a great baby face. They aired highlights of the TNT title ladder match at Forbidden Door with Jack Perry, the scapegoat, winning the championship. One of the men who lost to Jack Perry on Sunday was the Ring of Honor world champion, Mark Briscoe, who was in the ring. He said they might call him chicken, but he's not scared of shit. Briscoe said that Jack Perry must have ate an extra bowl of Lucky Charms and stuck a horseshoe up his ass to win the TNT title. He has a way with words, this man. Mark Briscoe is a great promo. He has a way with words. But he said that was last week. And he's not worried about last week. This week, he said, is Shark Week, which Warner Brothers Discovery loves when AEW has a whole show dedicated to Shark Week. Yeah, the synergy between them and AEW has been very good. Whenever they have something to promote, House of the Dragon, Shark Week, whatever it may be, AEW, they're always, you know, branding their show a certain way. You know, they've been very good about that. That's by design. Tony Khan wants to be on their good side. And I think it's going to pay off for him, because I think in these next few weeks, we're going to get a big announcement out of AEW and WBD. I said WWD. WBD.
Do you feel him, sir?
I don't feel him, sir. Not tonight. I don't feel him, but thank you, Cody. You may go now. So he said, you know, when he thinks of sharks, he thinks of blood. When he thinks of blood, it makes him think of blood and guts. It's coming up in a few weeks. And Mark Briscoe declared that he is going to officially be the first member of Team AEW against the Elite in that Blood and Guts match coming up in a few weeks. As he's talking about this, Jack Perry slides into the ring from behind. He cracks Briscoe in the back of the head with the TNT title. Here comes Kyle O'Reilly. He hits the ring. He attacks Perry. Until Kazuchika Okada, he appears from out of nowhere. He's in the ring, and he grabs Kyle O'Reilly, and he proceeds to lay him out with a rainmaker. So now the Young Bucks, they come strutting out onto the stage, down to the ring. They hit the EVP trigger on Mark Briscoe. That brings out the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn. They sprint to the ring, and the Elite bail out through the crowd. I think Mark Briscoe is a good fit for a Blood and Guts match. You know, we've seen him get bloody and violent in matches before in Ring of Honor plenty of times, him and his brother over the years. So I think he's a good fit for that. He's a big fan favorite. Kyle O'Reilly, I don't feel the same way. Kyle's a great wrestler. I have nothing against Kyle O'Reilly. I don't want to see Kyle O'Reilly on Team AEW. Team AEW needs to mostly consist of, you know, some big names. The biggest, of course, being the AEW World Champion. Swerve Strickland needs to be the team captain. He needs to lead Team AEW into combat. He didn't do it at Anarchy in the Arena because he already had a match. There was no reason. Plus, he already said a few weeks ago, he goes, look, if you guys are going to do another match like this with a Team AEW, you got to have me in there. So he's got to lead the charge for Team AEW. So you would have Swerve. You would have Mark Briscoe. I think the Acclaimed could very well end up as part of this because they're mixed into this whole story. Maybe Will Ospreay. You get Will Ospreay on one side. Maybe MJF ends up being the fifth man with the Elite. We'll see how that plays out. Kyle O'Reilly, though, I mean, him being included here makes me think there's a chance he may be on Team AEW. I don't want to see him as part of this match. I just don't think he fits. You know, they need a bigger name than that. We had our second semifinal match in the Owen Hart Foundation tournament. This time it was a showcase for the ladies with Chris Statlander going one-on-one with her former best friend, Willow Nightingale.
Do you feel him, sir?
You know what? Now I do. I do feel him. Mount Vernon Kid, Christopher Bennett, thank you. Thank you very much for the super chat. Willow walked out onto the stage for her entrance after Statlander and Stokely Hathaway had already made their entrance. Statlander went right after her. Didn't even give her a chance to get down to the ring. So Statlander meets her on stage. They start brawling. They're trying not to knock over the Owen Cup, which is standing there on a pedestal on stage. And Willow proceeds to pounce Chris Statlander so hard, she knocks this woman backwards and she rolls all the way down the ramp to the floor. And not only does she roll all the way down the ramp to the floor, but they have the LED apron. And so she smacks into the screen. So that was a hell of a pounce to kick things off here. Both women fought to the apron. Statlander wanted a suplex to the floor. Basically, she had her by the waist. And she was trying to German suplex her from the apron to the floor, which, of course, I don't know why you would want to do that because you may break your own neck in the process. Willow's holding on, though. Eventually, Willow shoves her off, and Statlander just crashes to the floor. Stokely is tending to his client. Willow is now out on the apron, and she sees this, and she is targeting Stokely Hathaway. She comes flying off with a cannonball. Stokely moves out of the way, and Statlander took the bump instead. Statlander dodged the doctor bomb, hit an axe kick for two. German suplex folded up Willow Nightingale. I mean folded Willow up. Willow came back with an avalanche German suplex of her own. She got cut off with basically a haluva kick. Nightingale, though, rolled out of the Wednesday Night Fever for a roll-up for two. Stokely, then, pulls out a steel chain, and he places the chain on the mat in the corner before taking the referee for the distraction. Statlander grabs the chain. She goes to use it. Willow moves. Now, Stokely was on the apron talking to or arguing with the referee. So she almost hit Stokely, her own man, with the chain. Statlander, though, puts on the brakes. Nightingale, though, got a schoolgirl for the flash pin to win and to advance to the next round, that being the finals of the Owen Hart tournament. Hathaway could not believe what just happened. They got a zoom in on Stokely's face. His eyes were bugging out of his skull. He couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. I was genuinely surprised by that finish. I had Statlander winning and going to the finals against Mariah May even before Forbidden Door. But especially Forbidden Door, you know, Willow and Tam Nakano, they got the win on the pre-show over Statlander and Momo Watanabe. See, I remember. So I thought for sure, okay, Statlander's going to pick up the win here, go to the finals. Mariah May has been more of a babyface lately anyway, so you get babyface against heel in the final. And so when Willow rolled her up like that and got the pin, I was genuinely surprised. I thought it was going to go the other way. So instead, they're sending Willow Nightingale, who won last year's Owen Hart tournament. They're sending Willow back to the finals now. Is she going to repeat and win for the second year in a row? No, she's not. But Statlander, I can see Statlander getting involved and distracting her, costing her the win in some way, because you got to keep that feud going. I would like to see Willow and Statlander run this back, maybe with a stip of some kind, maybe just do like a no-holds-barred type match, and run it back at Wembley. Let these two ladies go out there and just beat the hell out of each other. And if they want to blow it off there, they can blow it off there. They were best friends. They were tag team partners and best friends for so long. You know, that you got to keep this feud going and blow it off in the biggest possible way. To do that at Wembley Stadium would make sense. Or they could have the second match at Wembley and then run it back one more time 2 weeks later at All Out. Right? You got basically two pay-per-views back-to-back, so you could do that as well. But watch for Statlander to factor into that match next week. Because Willow's not going to repeat. There ain't going to be another cut for her. A lot of big moves here, though. A lot of power moves. This one was a lot of fun. Tony Schiavone was in the ring. Good to see he got his voice back. Tony was not at Forbidden Door, or at least he wasn't doing commentary at Forbidden Door. He lost his voice towards the end of Dynamite last week. That's why he disappeared. During that show, he was there, and then you didn't hear from him again because he lost his voice. So he got his voice back. He was in the ring to introduce Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, for her first promo since coming back at Forbidden Door. And she comes to the ring, and the first thing she does, she hugs Tony Schiavone. Because, of course, the two of them are like this. The two of them have been friends for the longest time. Nobody was happier than Tony to see Britt Baker back in the ring tonight. And he left the microphone with her, and we didn't see Tony again. So she had the ring all to herself. And she talked about how all of us have a past, a present, and a future. And by the way, I don't know if you'll be able to hear it or not, but there are people in the neighborhood who are getting their July 4th celebration early. They're getting started early. So if you hear any sonic booms in the background, or if you see me, you know, jump up like that and get scared, it's because they're setting off fireworks. That's why I waited. I actually delayed the start of this stream because for like 5 minutes straight, I don't know where it was. It could have been like a couple blocks away. They set off the biggest pyro display that I have ever heard in my entire life. It was nonstop, I shit you not, for 5 minutes straight. I said, I'm going to delay the start of this show because otherwise all you're going to hear is boom, 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 boom. I hate this time of year. Absolutely hate it. You know who I feel sorry for? I actually feel sorry for anybody who has a cat or a dog because this is like the most traumatic day of the entire, other than going to the vet, this is the most traumatic day of the entire year. You know, when I still had my cat, every July 4th, as soon as those fireworks, I knew I wasn't going to see her for 3 days. She was going to be under a bed. She was going to be under some piece of furniture. This poor cat was traumatized. I wasn't going to see her. Like, I already knew it. But it sucks for them, unfortunately. But yeah, she talked about how everybody has a past, a present, and a future. First, the past. She said people have probably wondered where she's been for the last 10 months. She said the answer was always that I'm injured. You know, Britt is injured. She said people know that it would take more than a couple of herniated discs and a torn labrum to keep her, I think it was like a hip labrum, she said. So that's also new. I didn't know that there was a torn hip labrum that she had, but she threw that in there as well. She said it would take more than that to keep her away for that long. She said one day back in November, she felt really sick, and she started to have blurry vision. Her right arm got numb. So she didn't think anything of it. She said, look, I'm good. Until she went to go open a bottle of water, and she couldn't do it. She could not open a bottle of water. And that is when she knew, I'm not good, and I need to find out what the hell is going on here, because that's not normal. So she spent a week in the hospital. She said what happened was her brain was not getting enough blood, and what she was diagnosed with was what they call a TIA, which is basically a mini stroke. Britt Baker basically had a small stroke. She knew at that moment she wasn't good. Tony Khan told her, stay home. Let me know when you are good. Take all the time you need. Now the present. She said, I'm here, I'm cleared, and I'm healthy. She says she was never more nervous than she was on Sunday at Forbidden Door, even though all she did was stand on the ramp. She didn't do anything. She said she never doubted herself more than that and didn't know if anybody would give a damn when she came out. She said the fans cheered because they have felt the fear of rejection. She said the fear is often worse than the rejection itself. And she said that when she needed pro wrestling, and AEW, and the fans, they welcomed her back with open arms and DMD chants. She says she will always be in the corner of the fans because she is one of them. See, she's one of us. Now she says the future. She said that when you're going through a hard time, be present and feel all of it because you will get to the other side. She said she heard there's a new female face of AEW. She said it must be so rewarding to her to call herself that after giving her blood, sweat, and tears to build this company from the ground up. And she accused Mercedes Moné of manipulating her fans into chanting CEO by piping it into her entrance music. She said the only three letters that matter are DMD. So at that point, we heard a horn honking. She looked up at the big screen. We saw a black SUV pulling up to the arena outside, and out steps Mercedes Moné. Exits the car. She's got both of her championship belts with her. The Young Bucks were there to greet her. They told her that your double championship celebration is ready. You can head to the ring. And they cut back to the ring, and Britt Baker is still standing in the ring. And now we see people coming out. They're bringing balloons out. They're building this, you know, not really a set, but they're building the environment here for a celebration around Britt while she's standing in the middle of the ring. And she's watching them set up. So here comes Mercedes out to loud boos from the fans here in Chicago at the Wintrust Arena. She heads to the ring. There are two large photos of her set up in different corners. So she's playing to the crowd. And Britt says, look, I get it. She says, so wait, actually one thing I wanted to mention here is that she was leaning into it too. So that's what I was hoping coming out of Forbidden Door. She got a heel reaction at Forbidden Door. And some people were wondering, is that going to be a one-off? You know, you had people chanting, fuck the Celtics and fuck the Red Sox. She's from Boston. New York doesn't like Boston. Boston doesn't like New York. Right? Boston doesn't like New York. And so you got this war between the fan bases. Maybe it's just a one-night thing. And I said, no, I don't think it is, and I hope it isn't. She needs to be a heel. And I said, I think she knows it, and I think Tony Khan recognizes it. She needs to be a heel. The whole gimmick, the CEO, right? She comes out, and she's doing this and everything, and she's a fucking heel. So she was definitely healing it up when she came out. It wasn't just that the fans were booing, and she was just being, you know, why are they booing me? Like, no. It's very clear that they have embraced Mercedes in the heel role, which is good to see. It's the right role for her to be in. So anyway, they had the giant photos set up in the corners. Mercedes is playing to the crowd, and Britt says, look, I get it. I outshined your moment on Sunday at Forbidden Door. Now you're trying to outshine me. Mercedes claimed that she made Forbidden Door famous by becoming a double champion, at which point a chant of shut the fuck up broke out. Again, not censored. Thank you, TBS. Mercedes said that she should have known that Britt would try to steal her spotlight and told her that she wanted her to see what a real star looks like. And Britt responded by saying, all in. She said, all in, Mercedes. I wrestled at the first all in right here in Chicago. Big pop. She said that she was the first female to sign with AEW. She said that she wrestled at all in last year while Mercedes was looking like a broken bitch with a broken leg in the stands. Baker said that she wants to face Mercedes at this year's All In. So Mercedes puts her hand out and pie faces her backwards. And she said she's never broke. She stays rich. She told Britt that there's a long list of challengers, and she told Britt to get to the back of the line. Britt looked behind her, behind Mercedes, and said, "What line?" And Mercedes said, "There's a price to pay when you mess with Mercedes Monet." She's like a walking cliche, this woman. Everything is like some sort of signature catchphrase with her. She has to talk like a normal human being. Not everything could be a slogan or a tagline. What do you think she is here? Chris Jericho? Come on now. Her theme played. She danced with her belts. And that was the end of the segment. I enjoyed this. Yeah, they gave them a lot of time, too. They gave Britt all the time she needed to cut her promo. It went right into the Mercedes celebration. It was just one long, continuous segment. They gave this as much time as I have seen them give the women on television in one segment, maybe in the history of this company, when it comes to TV. So they gave them lots of time. The thing about Britt Baker, she's got some great zingers in her promos. She can be a little wooden in her delivery, and I think she was here a little bit. She could be wooden in her delivery, but as far as this promo goes, she had the chance to go out there and be real and to really update us on what's been going on with her and her health and to speak from the heart about what she's been going through. And you know, what she said here in this segment, it really just goes to show you never really know what somebody is going through. I knew that she had a bad back. I didn't know that she had, you know, a torn muscle in her hip. I didn't know, you know, certainly I didn't know about the situation with the mini stroke. That is very scary. For those who don't know or have never heard what a TIA is, it's symptoms that are very similar to that of a stroke. It's very brief. It's not like a long-lasting thing, and there's no long-lasting damage from it. Typically. But what's scary, other than when you're in the moment and you're experiencing the symptoms, obviously that's scary. But the scary thing is that those who suffer from it are more prone to having an actual stroke at some point in the future. And not necessarily down the road when you're 50 or 60 or 70 years old, as is the case here. I mean, Britt Baker is 33 years old, you know, and she had a mini stroke. It could happen to anybody. It doesn't matter what age you are. It could happen to anybody, and that's what makes it scary. It happens to a lot of younger people, but it could be a sign that, hey, you may be in line for an actual full-blown stroke at some point, you know, in the next several years. And there are steps that you can take to try to avoid that and try to prevent that from happening. But that's a scary thing. And I had no idea. I don't think anybody had any idea. They kept that pretty close to the vest. You know, it kind of reminds me of when Serena Deeb came back. You know, poor Serena, you know, she comes back and she's on Dynamite that one week on stage with Renee. And she's pouring her heart and soul out and telling everybody about the three unprovoked seizures that she had. And the people couldn't care. And they were more interested in cheering for Toni Storm. And like what was supposed to be this really heartfelt, emotional promo kind of got trampled over. But she's another one where you hear that and it's like, holy shit, you know, three unprovoked seizures. Couldn't figure out for the longest time what caused it. Thought she might never wrestle again. Was wondering, is this going to happen to me again? What's my quality of life going to be? It's a scary thing. It's a very scary thing. But I'm very happy that she is cleared and she is okay. The Chicago crowd reacted very big to this. And I was thinking about this. And then I got a tweet from somebody as well. They've got All Out in Chicago 2 weeks after All In. So she threw the challenge out here for All In. Makes all the sense in the world because the biggest possible match that you could do right now in that AEW women's division is the face, the current face of that division. Which is Mercedes, at least in storyline. I mean, I say that, but Toni Storm is the actual women's world champion. The TBS title is not supposed to be above the women's world title, but they're certainly portraying it that Mercedes now as a double champion is really the face of the AEW women's division against the woman who has traditionally from day one been the face of that division in Britt Baker. When Britt Baker debuted in AEW at the beginning of all this 5 years ago, when this company first started, and they were sending people out on the red carpet and sending them out to do media and press, she was always right there with the EVPs. It was Cody and Kenny and the Bucks, and there was Britt, and sometimes Nyla Rose as well. Those were the original kind of founding faces of this company. So she's not lying when she talks about how, from day one, she helped build this division. They put everything behind her. And I remember those early days, and Britt was still very raw. She wasn't that good. I'm just going to say it. I'm not saying she sucked, but you look at the progress she made from at the very beginning when she first came in. It was almost like she was very timid. She was a babyface back then. I remember when she turned heel, I thought, man, this is great. This is exactly what she needed. And then she turned into a totally different performer at that point. And it unlocked a side of her personality that we just never got to see when she was a babyface. It was the best thing that could have happened to her. And she has really evolved since then. Not only in the ring, she's gotten better, but on promos. You compare Britt Baker 5 years ago at the start of all this to the Britt Baker now, it's like two different people. The best thing that ever happened to her. So you want to do that match at Wembley Stadium because it's the biggest match on the biggest possible stage. But, you've got All Out 2 weeks later. You saw the reaction that these two women got here in Chicago. And I did. I got a tweet from Jacob, and he asked me specifically about the idea of headlining a show. Headlining not only a show, headlining a pay-per-view with the women. And if ever they were going to do it, this would be the match to do it. Because, again, this is the biggest match they could do in the women's division. You're not going to headline Wembley Stadium with them. But what about All Out? What if 2 weeks later at All Out, they run the match back a second time? What if they headline All Out with Britt Baker and Mercedes Moné, maybe with a stipulation? I could see that. If you were going to do it, if the women were going to have the opportunity to close out an AEW pay-per-view and try to have this epic main event, again, Wembley, not going to happen. Could it happen in Chicago 2 weeks later? Yes. I think that that would be maybe the best opportunity for them to go out and do that. I don't know if they will. I don't even know if they're going to wrestle on that show. Although I doubt very seriously that Wembley Stadium is going to be the only Britt Baker-Mercedes Moné match that we get. But this set the stage now for that match. That's another big match added to that card. And I thought what they did here was great. This is what this women's division has needed, a big feud like this. And still, you have Toni Storm and the Mariah May story. That's going to play out as well when Mariah wins the Owen. And we find out, and Toni finds out, oh shit, I got to defend my title against my protege. They've been playing this story out for months. It's all been building to this moment. And, you know, to build to Wembley, and you have Mariah, right, who's from there, and she's going to go in and challenge for the championship. That's another big story that's been building now for months and months and months. So they're in a good place right now as far as their, I think, key stories and key feuds in the women's division. And then you have Statlander and Willow, who had a really good match tonight, and I'd like to see them run that back as well. That's three that I just named right there. We had footage of the main event of Forbidden Door. Will Ospreay refusing to use the screwdriver that Don Callis handed him, and it ended up costing him the match. So now we come back live, and he is in the back with Renee, along with Kyle Fletcher. Ospreay could not even get a word in before Don Callis shows up. Ospreay said, look, it wasn't your fault, it's my fault. I hit the referee because he accidentally wiped out the referee with the hidden blade. Because I hit the referee. I couldn't bring myself to do the Tiger Driver. He just doesn't think that he's that guy anymore. Don gave him the tools that it took to be that guy. He gave Will Chris Jericho at Wembley Stadium. He said his life has changed. He owes Don so much. He has a loyalty to him, but he wants out. He wants out of the Don Callis family. So obviously, you know, Kyle's looking on. He's shocked. He's standing in the background. And this catches Don Callis off guard, and he's obviously not happy about this. He He says, you know, normally it's not, so I'm not really in the habit of letting people out of signed agreements, but I'm so proud of you. He said he's happy to do him the favor. Maybe one day he'll ask Will for a favor. And Callis gives Ospreay a hug and he says, you're going to be the world champion one day. And then he flashes this evil sneer that Ospreay can't see, but we can. And then he tells Kyle, come on, Kyle. And Callis leaves and Kyle looks at Will and he goes off. So that's it. Will Ospreay is out of the Don Callis family, and he thinks that it's a very amicable split, but of course, I'm sure that will end up not being the case. How this is going to play out, I don't know. Now, remember, twice now on TV, we have seen Callis in the last few weeks have a conversation with Roosh. And the first time he went and go found Roosh, and he told Roosh, I have an opportunity for you. We don't know what that opportunity is or was. We don't know what they discussed. We don't know if he may be a hired hitman. And he's going to send Roosh after Will Ospreay at some point. We don't know. That story will have to play itself out because we all know Don Callis is not just going to let him out of the Callis family. But that's how they opted to get him out of here. Now we just wait for Callis to lower the boom and you know, do something to show Will Ospreay that you don't leave the family. Once you're in, you can't leave. So if it felt anticlimactic, it was, but it's clearly building to something else. So that's why I say take a wait-and-see approach on what the next chapter of this story is going to be. Callis is not going to let that slide. And then we had Chris Jericho. We had the learning tree. On his way down to the ring, he was accompanied by a bunch of security guards who stood directly in front of Taz at the announce desk. Jericho said Hook committed one of the biggest sins in all of wrestling at Forbidden Door. He stole someone else's finishing maneuver, which doesn't work for me, brother. Also, Taz, he said, acted like a mark by cheering for his son at ringside. Well, I mean, Taz was very happy. You know, to see his son pick up the win. It's the first time I've seen him smile. How many times do we see Taz smile? Ever, right? Very rare. Maybe twice a year. So he went and talked to Matthew and Nicholas. And he told the Young Bucks he doesn't feel safe being out here doing commentary at the same desk sitting next to Taz. So they granted him, and he had it in his hand, they granted him an executive order removing Taz from commentary and from the building for the rest of the night. And security escorted Taz from the arena. Jericho took his spot on commentary. Jericho got good heat for this because it was just a very basic, effective heel angle. You know, booting Taz out of the building. Of course, yeah, it's going to get heat. It's going to get boos. People like Taz. People don't like Jericho. So this was very effective as far as getting heel heat, but that doesn't change the fact that the learning tree stuff is still god-awful. We had Samoa Joe, Hook, and Katsuyori Shibata taking on Brian Cage, Bishop Khan, and Toa Leona. So the match broke down. Cage, Leona, and Khan, they tried a triple suplex. Everybody, though, floated over into a trifecta of chokeholds. And Toa Leona tapped out. It's really all you need to know about that. Now, Jericho's sitting at ringside. He's applauding from the desk. And that allows Big Bill and Brian Keith to attack from behind with chairs. Jericho's choking out Hook with his jacket. Brian Keith ripped off his arm sling. Excalibur questioned if anything was even wrong with his arm in the first place, which, of course, it wasn't. He took the chair. And he placed Shibata's arm in the chair, and he pilmanized Shibata's arm. Big Bill, so that way he can't use his phone device anymore. I guess Shibata can't do the text to talk, right? He's got a broken arm now. He's got a text with one hand. I guess he could do it with one hand. See, what he should have done is pilmanize the other arm. But then again, I mean, these days you could probably just ask for Siri, right? like, hey, Siri, and then Siri would... Shit. I knew that was going to happen. I knew that was going to happen. But you say, hey, Siri... I'm not going to say it. Hey, blank, and then he could just dictate his text that way, I guess. But anyway, so... That's what happened to poor Shibata here. Meanwhile, as this beatdown continued, Big Bill draped Samoa Joe across the ring steps and he battered him a couple of times across the back with a steel chair. Jericho then brandished a pair of brass knucks and he laid out Hook with them. They were not done yet, though. They set up a table in the ring and Big Bill gave Hook a giant choke slam through the table. Fast forward a few segments later, and Hook was being tended to in the back when he got jumped by Big Bill and Brian Keith, and then a fireball flew in from off screen, and then Chris Jericho walked into camera view. So he's a wizard again. We haven't seen the wizard in a while. I can't keep his gimmick straight. So is he back to being the wizard, or is he still the learning tree? I'm not sure. Now he's mixing gimmicks now. Now I'm very confused. So that was the end of Hook. He's been blinded. He's been fireballed. I'm sure that Taz, when he finds out, is not going to be very happy. I'm wondering the extent to which we see Taz have any physicality whatsoever, because Taz just doesn't do anything physical. You know, he's all beat up. He's got so many injuries. I mean, his neck, his knees. He can't work a match. So I'm just wondering if at some point we at least get him putting Jericho. I would imagine that at some point he'll at least put Jericho in the Taz mission, you know, or punch him in the face or something. In the final Owen Hart quarterfinal match, it was Jeff Jarrett one-on-one against the wild card. Who would be the wild card here in the Owen Hart tournament? Well, it was indeed Hangman Adam Page. Back for the first time since March. Back for the first time since he was suspended from the Elite. He was the wild card. He walked out. He's got new music. And they did not have the... Now, he didn't come out with the lights in the arena off, but they didn't have that usual light, that usual spotlight on the person when they come out. So it was very dark. He was very dark when he walked out. There was a darkness to him. And he had a scowl on his face. And he was just pissed off from the moment he walked out there. I want to talk about Jeff Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett was added to this tournament. And there was a lot of divided opinion about whether or not he should even be in the tournament. And when they made the announcement and I saw the bracket the first time, I said, what is he doing in there, right? Why take a spot away from someone else that could be a bigger name, maybe, who you could potentially buy into, could maybe win? That's what I was hoping for. Then they had that segment with Jarrett on Collision, and it was maybe 90 seconds, but I went and I watched the unedited, extended version of the sit-down promo, basically, sit-down interview that he did talking about Owen Hart and his friendship with Owen, his relationship with Owen, his partnership with Owen, what Owen meant to him. And, you know, he was there obviously the night that Owen died. And it was a tremendous piece of business. It was great. It was a very emotional thing. He got very emotional. It was very effective. And he is the only man in this tournament who can actually say that he knew Owen Hart. Owen was a friend of his. He was a partner. They wrestled 70 matches together as tag team partners, right? Nobody else in this tournament can say that. So there was a lot of sentiment from people who saw that and said, just have him win the tournament. How can you root against Jeff Jarrett after that promo that he cut? He told you what this meant to him, why he wants to be in the Owen, and he's got to win. He's going to do it for Owen, right? You let him win the entire thing. Let him at least go to the finals, right? I said, you people are out of your mind. It was clearly very effective that there were any people who felt that this man should win the tournament. I don't want to say that there were a lot of people, but there were enough that I was surprised that people would allow themselves to fall into that trap. But I guess it just shows how effective that segment was. Jeff Jarrett winning this tournament would have been a fucking terrible idea. Jeff Jarrett going to the finals wouldn't have been as terrible, but it would have been almost as terrible. Jeff Jarrett was never going to get out of the opening round. He never should have gotten out of the opening round. I didn't have an issue with him being in the spot, though. Once I saw that promo, I understood it, and I was okay with it. But at no point did I feel like, well, man, they should just, you know, they should let this guy win. They really should just give him a win. Once we knew he was wrestling the wild card, we knew the wild card was going over. It didn't matter who the wild card was. It could have been Hangman. It could have been Will Ospreay. It could have been MJF. It could have been Ricochet. It could have been me. It could have been anybody. Whoever the wild card was going to be was not going in there to lose to Jeff Jarrett. To his credit, this was a lot better than I thought it would be. Jarrett is obviously older. He's showing his age. He doesn't move around the way he used to. Father Time is undefeated. It catches up with everybody. But this was a much better match and a much more competitive match than I was expecting it to be. We got a much more aggressive Hangman Page in this match. He was biting at Jarrett's head. He wanted the dead eye. Jarrett hit the stroke on the ring apron. Both men narrowly beat the count back in. Jarrett teased a sharpshooter, but Page escaped. Again, though, a little while later, Jarrett tried for a sharpshooter. Page went to the eyes, though, and hit a dead eye. There was actually a moment in here where Jarrett hit an enziguri. Page had caught his foot, and Jarrett kicked him in the back of the head. That's a classic Owen Hart move. Owen Hart used the enziguri in every match that he ever had. He used the enziguri, in fact, when he kicked Shawn Michaels in the back of the head, and Shawn ended up collapsing, and they did that whole angle with him back in 95, the post-concussion syndrome. So I saw that, and I said, that's an Owen special right there. So the crowd taunted Hangman with chants of Swerve's house. Page wanted a buckshot lariat. Jarrett collapsed, but it was a ruse. He suckered him in, and Jarrett tried again for the sharpshooter. This time he got the sharpshooter applied. It got a big reaction. People were going crazy for the sharpshooter spot here. Hangman, though, got to the ropes. Page pulled Jarrett throat first into the top rope and then hit the buckshot lariat, but he did not go for the pin. Instead, he pounced on this man with more punches, and then he delivered one final deadeye, dropped him on his head, and pinned him to win the match. A far more competitive match than I think most people would have expected out of this. I don't mind it, though. I understand there may be people who think this was a little too competitive, but I thought it fit the story. The story they were telling with Jeff Jarrett was that this was all heart, right? He was fighting with heart. He was fighting for Owen. This was his friend. He wanted to honor his friend by not only being in the tournament, but winning the entire thing. So this was Jeff Jarrett at the very best that we could possibly get him in 2024. He was not going to quit. He was not going to lay down. He was going to throw the kitchen sink at this man and do what he could to win. And it still wasn't enough in the end. But damn it, I'm going to put up a hell of a fight. And that's what he did. That was the story they wanted to tell. And telling that story for one match, perfectly fine. I have no problem with that. This did not need to be a squash. They had a story to tell. Jarrett had the fans behind him. Not just with the sharpshooter. He had the fans behind him. I mean, anybody who saw that interview a few weeks ago, how can you not be rooting for this man in this match? It made him an automatic babyface. In the end, though, he just wasn't good enough. So Hangman advances to wrestle Switchblade Jay White in the next round. That's going to be on Collision on Saturday. The winner of that match will move on to the finals in Calgary next week to go one-on-one with Bryan Danielson. Danielson and Jay White have never wrestled before. Danielson and Hangman have wrestled three times before. All three of those times were actually on Dynamite, not on a pay-per-view. All three of those matches were excellent. And if we're going to get part four, which I'm sure we are, then I am still very much looking forward to it. Even though it's been done three times before, the first three were great. I'm sure part four will be great too. I still would like to see Bryan Danielson and Jay White at some point before Danielson's done at WrestleDream. Maybe that could be the WrestleDream match. I don't know. Could be Wembley, but I'm pulling for Danielson and Nigel McGuinness on that show. But we're going to get Hangman and Danielson in the finals next week. You can bet your dollar on that. Your last dollar is the last one you got. I don't care. You can bet your final dollar. It's going to be Bryan Danielson and Hangman Adam Page in the finals. Renee was backstage with a pacing Hangman Adam Page, who was approached by the Young Bucks, who said, hey, you can thank us at any time. And they said, they'll scratch his back as long as he scratches theirs. They want him, of course they want something out of him. And what they want is for him to be their fifth man in Blood and Guts. Well, he's not interested in being their fifth man in Blood and Guts. He grabs Matthew by the jacket violently and says he's not a child. He doesn't need their shit anymore. He's not the elite's man anymore. No more bullshit games. He's in the Owen and he's going to win it. And then he shoved Nicholas as well as he walked off. So he's a heel, or certainly heelish, but that doesn't mean he's back with the elite. It's perfect if you think about it, because the last time we saw Hangman, he was definitely more heelish than not. But he's just a guy who's obsessed with Swerve Strickland. He's a man obsessed with making sure that this man is not the AEW world champion. His one singular goal was to make sure that this man never won that world title. And then he did. We haven't seen him since. This is his first time back. Now his mission is to take that title away from him. And he is obsessed with it. He will fuck up anybody who stands in his way. He doesn't need any friends. He doesn't need any partners. His only goal is to take down Swerve, which is why he needs to win the Owen, so we can get that one-on-one match this time for the AEW world title. That's the difference between this one and all the other ones that they've had. They've never had a one-on-one match for the AEW world title. And as great as their first few matches were last year, WrestleDream and Full Gear, I like the fact that they're going to have, likely, going to have a much bigger stage, the biggest stage they could possibly have, to go out there in the main event and just beat the living crap out of each other and pay off what has been a nearly year-long feud. You know, when they first did this match last year at WrestleDream, I didn't envision this still going on and still being a thing after all this time. But that's the motivation for the Hangman character. He just wants to make sure that he knocks this guy down and takes that title away from him. And that doesn't mean he's back in the good graces of the elite. In the main event, we had Will Ospreay defending the AEW International title against Daniel Garcia with a special guest at ringside to observe, one MJF, who was encouraging Garcia throughout the match. It was like he was his corner man, like it was a boxing fight or an MMA fight. They were having a really good match. Garcia avoided an Os cutter and hit a spike pile driver for two. At that point, MJF left his dynamite diamond ring sitting on the mat in full view of Garcia so that he can use it. Garcia picks up the ring, and you would think that it was something out of Lord of the Rings. He's staring at this thing like it's some ancient artifact. He's just standing there with this. Meanwhile, his opponent is, you know, having time to regroup here. And he doesn't realize it. So as he's observing this ring and admiring this ring, he stared at it for too long. He got rolled up for a near fall. Imagine if he would have been pinned there. What a fucking geek he would have looked like. But he kicked out. Garcia turned Ospreay inside out with a clothesline. And MJF is encouraging him, use the ring. Use the ring as a weapon. Garcia ends up handing the ring back to MJF. He's like, I can't do it. I don't want to do it that way. And MJF has a look on his face like, all right, I understand, right? You know he doesn't, though. But he's like, okay, cool, respect. Yeah, respect. Respect the hidden blade, because as soon as he turned around after being the righteous man, he turned around, he got wiped out. He got knocked the fuck out with the hidden blade, and Ospreay covered him and pinned him to retain the international title. See, this is what happens. Same thing happened to Will Ospreay at Forbidden Door. He wouldn't use the screwdriver. And in the end, he lost the match. Roddy Piper, WrestleMania, Bret Hart. He could have used the ring bell. He had it raised above his head. He was going to use the ring bell. He chucked it aside. The old Roddy Piper would have used it. He had a conscience. This is what happens when you have a conscience. You end up losing. Remember Bobby Heenan? What the hell? Use the bell. Had he done that, he might still be the Intercontinental Champion today. 40 years later. Or whatever, 35 years later, however long it's been. What is it, 2024, 1992? I'm terrible with math. It's been a long fucking time, put it that way. But even though he lost, Daniel Garcia lost the match, we were not done yet. We were just getting started. The main angle had yet to play itself out. Ospreay goes, he thanks Garcia. He's kind of giving him a pep talk. Garcia's in tears. He's very upset, you know, that he lost this match. And very similar to what Swerve Strickland did with Ospreay at the end of their match on Sunday, where he kind of crouched down and he gave him a hug and gave him a pep talk. So he was doing the same thing here with Daniel Garcia. Ospreay leaves. MJF gets into the ring to check on Daniel. Picks him up, brings him up to his feet, and he says, "That's not your fault. That loss is not your, that's not on you." He said, "That's on me." Tells Garcia, "You busted your ass." And he raises his hand. He gives him a hug. And then as he's standing there, he punts Daniel Garcia in the balls. And Daniel Garcia collapses to his knees. And the fans in Chicago, they rain boos down upon MJF, who told us from day one, even when he was in his babyface phase, that he was a scumbag. Well, you should have believed him when he said it, because he never really changed. He's always been that guy. He just got a little sappy there for a while. He just lost his way. He got soft. And now he's seeing the error of his ways. So instant heel heat, once he kicked this man in the crotch. MJF put on the diamond ring. He was about to use it. Matt Menard hit the ring, jumped up on the apron. He took the shot instead with the ring. So he gets knocked down. Garcia now is struggling to his feet, and he gets knocked out by the diamond ring. They cut away from him. They're showing MJF. He's yelling at the fans. And then when they cut back to Daniel Garcia, you know, magically now he's bleeding. Bleeding from the head. And Matt Menard also. They show Matt Menard outside. He's split open from the diamond ring shot. And MJF is just laying a vicious beatdown on this kid. Here comes Christopher Daniels. Here comes Rocky Romero. They have other officials coming out as well. They're pleading with MJF because he is now on the middle rope and he has Daniel Garcia turned upside down, and he proceeds to give this man an avalanche tombstone pile driver off the middle rope. The same avalanche tombstone that he gave to Sammy Guevara when they wrestled back at Daly's Place on Dynamite. And Sammy Guevara kicked out. But not Daniel Garcia. Daniel Garcia is laying there. He's twitching on the ground. He is done for. Whatever happened to Sammy anyway? I just realized it's the first time I've said his name, I feel like, in months. I hadn't even thought about him. I totally forgot about Sammy Guevara. I wonder, you know, I don't know, but I wonder if it's one of those Tony Khan specials where he's just going to let the guy's contract expire and then let him go. I don't know. Haven't heard anything about him. Kind of strange. But anyway, so he hits the avalanche tombstone. Now Will Ospreay finally staggers out from the back on his way down to the ring. And MJF bails through the crowd. He's spitting on some fans. there were a couple fans he got up in their face. There was one fan in particular. I mean, he had this guy hot. Like, this guy was ready to throw hands with MJF. And then eventually he exits out of the building. Meanwhile, in the ring, they cut back and they load Garcia onto a backboard. He gets stretchered out of the building. Ospreay was very upset, and Christopher Daniels was trying to calm him down and telling him that he's going to take care of things. Don't worry about it. It's good to have MJF back in the heel column. It's something that I have been openly talking about over the last 2 weeks, last two reviews. I was kind of hoping. I literally said, this version of MJF is just not doing it for me. It's like my prayers have been answered. Now we got the scumbag back. Now we got that villainous SOB that I've been waiting to see for a long time. Because think about it, he's been in that fan favorite, not really a baby. I always hesitate to even call him a babyface. There's really nothing ever about MJF that ever screamed babyface, even when he was one. But that's what he was for a while, and he leaned into it, and the fans were on his side, and he had the kangaroo kick and all that corny-ass shit that he was doing, but it was over. But it was still corny. And now we can just forget about all that. And he said that on day one. Now, when he came back at Double or Nothing, he said, no more bullshit, no more games, no more kangaroo kick. He told us then, like, all that shit is done. This just completed the return to form. Once he kicked this kid in the balls, it was a return to form for MJF. And now they have their top heel back in the company. He instantly becomes the top heel. There's nobody on that roster that's going to be a bigger heel than MJF. So I love it. I love that we got him back. The match itself, you know, very good match. It was really more about what happened post-match. Match itself, I thought was very good. The angle was very strong, and now the wheels are in motion. You saw how upset Ospreay was when he came back out at the very end. The wheels now are in motion for MJF one-on-one, not a triple threat, one-on-one with Will Ospreay at All Out. That's your number two match right there. Whatever the world title match is going to be, Swerve and Hangman or Swerve and Danielson, whatever it is. That's number one. This right here is number two. It's all set up right there. Probably for the international title. The Adam Cole story, I made reference to it at the beginning of the stream. They had to move on. Adam Cole is not ready to come back. And it was pretty clear he wasn't, just based on what they did when MJF came back at Double or Nothing. He just, you know, kicked this guy's ass, right? He laid him out with a brain buster, I think, and told them, get this piece of shit out of my ring. That felt like a write-off to me. Again, you know, Jim Ross has that famous saying, you know, one can't grieve forever. You're not going to wait around until the guy's healthy and ready to come back because you got to move on. MJF, you got to get him involved in something else. And the best role for him right now is not as the babyface seeking revenge on the heel faction that he can't feud with because the heel leader is not ready to come back. And I don't know what's going on with Wardlow. I don't give a fuck about the Undisputed Kingdom at this point. We have no Adam Cole. Wardlow feels like he's got one foot out the door. And that leaves the Kingdom and Roderick Strong. I mean, give me a break. Please. It's a shame they couldn't finish that story up in the proper way. That's not MJF's fault. That's not even Adam Cole's fault. You know, it was a freak thing that happened, but I don't care. Does this screw that up? Probably, but who gives a shit? This is much better. And this was always the inevitable outcome anyway, because when he came back, he said he put his faith and trust in Adam Cole. He had a friend for the first time, and he got burned, and he said never again. He will never allow that to happen again. So the writing was already on the wall. This was inevitable. And now they've got a great hook for Collision on Saturday because they announced that MJF is going to open the show. He's going to speak live. So that's a great way to entice people between what they did at the end and having him start the very next show, although I guess it would be Rampage, but the very next live show by having MJF at the beginning, that's a fantastic hook. So this was an excellent episode of Dynamite. A lot going on, but everything meant something. We got a couple of really strong tournament matches. Actually, more. Yeah, the two semifinals were the best ones, but that Hangman and Jeff Jarrett match was better than it had any right to be. All of the tournament matches tonight were very strong. The Mercedes segment with Britt, I enjoyed it, and it set up another big match for Wembley. The main event was very good. Great angle, hot angle. Instant heel heat there at the end for MJF. Very happy they did what they did there. Having Hangman back, happy to see him back as well. So they were really firing, I felt like, on all cylinders tonight. Not a lot of waste. Swerve Strickland, not on the show, didn't need to be. He'll be back on the show next week, and he should be your team captain for Team AEW when it comes to Blood and Guts. Now, Rampage is coming up on Friday. We have Mariah May against Hikaru Shida in the semifinals of the Owen Hart tournament. Roosh is wrestling Commander. On Collision, MJF is going to kick off the show on Saturday. We have Hangman against Jay White. That's going to be a semifinal match in the Owen Hart tournament. And we have Trish Adora against Timeless Toni Storm. So that's coming up on Saturday. And then on Dynamite next week, they're going to be live in Calgary at the Saddle Dome. And Martha Hart will be there, the Hart family. Bryan Danielson will be wrestling either Jay White or Hangman Adam Page in the finals of the Owen. You know, so next week, we're going to know who the number one contender is at Wembley Stadium for the world title. Willow Nightingale will take on the winner of the match between Mariah May and Hikaru Shida. It should be Mariah May, and then Mariah should go on to win the tournament. And Swerve Strickland returns. And so that is what we know at this point for Dynamite coming up next week. So this is good. Hopefully they can build on this and really get the momentum going heading into Wembley. So good shit. Love the show tonight. Let's take a look here at your super chats. There was no Twitter poll. But we have a poll in the live chat right now. For those of you who are on the stream, we have almost 800 votes so far. What did you think of Dynamite? 71% thumbs up, 18% thumbs in the middle, and 12% thumbs down. So a resoundingly positive score here from you guys, as voted on by you, the fans, for Dynamite tonight. So if you're in the live chat, go ahead and vote. That poll will be open until we are done here. Because that's how it works. That's how we do things. All right, let's take a look at your super chats and go back to the early ones, including the real CS02. He was the first one to drop a super chat. Always good to hear from the real CS. The feeling I got from watching the WrestleMania documentary was that the only reason why Rock wanted to pivot was that it destroyed his ego to see the fans react the way that they did. The We Want Cody hashtag trended for days. Yeah, I don't think you really needed a documentary to tell you that. I mean, it was embarrassing. If you're The Rock, it's got to be embarrassing to be out there, and you think this is going to be the biggest match in at least a decade in this company, right? He's probably coming in there thinking this is going to be the biggest thing since me and Cena at WrestleMania 28. And in the building that night, the fans were very happy to see him because they weren't expecting him, but then to see all the reaction online. And this is coming off of, you know, the reaction, the whole Black Adam thing, and then the thing with the attempted takeover of DC and the Maui stuff. I mean, he had this whole string of just bad publicity. And I just think that at some point, you know, his ego, it just was like, look, you know, he can't accept that. So how can we change the narrative here? And how can I turn myself into the hero? And this was, you know, this was the way. And it ended up being great because, again, we got heel Rock back and we had, you know, the Hollywood Rock, Final Boss Rock. So it ended up working out. But yeah, I would say that the pivot had a lot to do with probably a little bit of bruising to the ego and trying to save face. I think a lot of people figured that was the case a long time ago. Groovy Goose, if it were not for his issues, how big of a star could have could have Jeff Hardy become? Jeff Hardy was at one point the either most popular or number two most popular wrestler in the world. And he squandered that, and that's nobody's fault but his own. Had he stayed on the straight and narrow and his body held up, he would have become a much bigger star than he was. I can't say that he would have been the guy. I don't think they ever would have built around him as the guy. But he would have been easily number two or three. And if he could have maintained that spot, he would have made himself a whole lot of money. You know, he screwed himself out of a lot of money as well. Arabian Night. Max just made Garcia. When he returns, he'll be super over, maybe all out against MJF back in Chicago. Garcia is what WWE wishes Austin Theory could be. Yeah, and that's, I think I forgot to mention that, but that was one thing I wanted to also mention as far as what they set up for the future. We don't need Daniel Garcia as part of this at All In. The match at All In is MJF and Will Ospreay. 2 weeks later, they're going to be in Chicago, like they were tonight. You saw the reaction to it. You could do MJF and Daniel Garcia one-on-one at All Out. You do the Ospreay match at All In, you do the Garcia match at All Out. I think that makes a lot of sense. That's probably what I would do. Giandre Kincannon with the 1999. Was the... Oh, something flying around in here. Look at this. Look at this. We have a guest. We have a guest. I don't know if it's a mosquito or a moth. I think it's a moth. Well, I don't know where he is here, but I'm going to squash him. If I find him, I'm going to squash him. Giandre Kincannon, was the acknowledgement ceremony last year supposed to be the setup of Rock versus Roman? The acknowledgement ceremony? That was in January. Wasn't it? I don't remember the timeline. I don't think so. Again, the time I could be off on the timeline, but I don't think so. God damn it. This thing is pissing me off, man. He was in my ear. I heard a buzzing in my ear. I swear to God, if he tries to burrow into my ear, there's going to be blood and guts here on this stream. You're not going to have to wait until July 24th. You're going to get blood and guts here live tonight. Son of a bitch, you stay out of my ear. Where is he? Food Hive says, I effing love AEW. Wrestling is thriving right now. Food Hive, yes, wrestling is thriving right now. It's good to see. I think everybody is eating well, as they say. So that's a good thing. Oz and Glorious with the 12. Fire episode. Watching Disco Garcia and Daddy Magic get murdered like that was so satisfying. Those fucking clowns need to be wrestling in gyms for hot dogs, not main eventing on TV. Yes, but tell us how you really feel. I don't think it's a fly. It's bigger than a mosquito, but I don't know that it's a fly. I don't know what it is. Man, I don't know what's going to send me off the deep end. It's either going to be that or it's going to be the learning tree. It's going to be one or the other. Arby, awesome show tonight. I like the start to both All In and Blood and Guts. I hope you and the chat have an awesome weekend. Also, I made a sandwich, which was liked. The chef approved the sandwich for the Tuesday menu. So you got the meats, is what you're saying, Arby. Got some of that pastrami, maybe some roast beef. Barry MK with the 5. Been watching 2005 WWE shows in order. I'm at August, and Batista still says, "You talking to me" in his promos. Guess he really liked doing the parody. Well, those WrestleMania 21 parodies were the best thing they ever did. As far as like a WrestleMania promotion, I love those. Those were great. They tried to recreate them for WrestleMania last year, but I can't tell you a single one. You know, that's the difference between 2005 and 2023. I can tell you the ones from 05, right? The Basic Instinct one, the When Harry Met Sally one with Kurt Angle I forgot her name. But anyway, that one, the Braveheart one, the Undertaker Dirty Harry one, the Eddie Guerrero Booker T Pulp Fiction one. Like, there were so many great ones. I'm thinking back to last year. Okay, I take that back. The Bloodline one. The Bloodline Goodfellas one. I can't remember any of the other ones they did last year. Christy Hemme, thank you. I had her face in my head, but I couldn't remember the name. Jerome Eugenio. With Monet calling herself CEO, do you think she should lead an all-female faction? No, I think that she needs a bodyguard, and I think it should be Camille. I'm gonna keep saying it until it happens. I'm gonna will it into existence. I'm just gonna keep saying it. Rodimus Prime, no surprise MJF did what he did. Plus a good show overall. Long live the scumbag. MJF. Brian Mahoney. Lights out, all out. Garcia will beat MJF on that show. After all the ups and downs, Daniel Garcia to me is what AEW wishes Sammy Guevara would be. A guy that can be trusted to be a top guy. Well, I think the jury is out on whether or not he will be a top guy. But I do think that the match that you should do in Chicago at All Out should be MJF and Daniel Garcia. I do think that's the way to go. And if they want to put him over and give Garcia the biggest win of his career, you know, that's the place to do it. You have MJF go in there and beat Will Ospreay at Wembley, which would take some balls to beat Ospreay at Wembley Stadium. But if you're going to have Daniel Garcia go over on MJF, you got to at least give MJF the win over Ospreay. I feel like it all in. I don't know if they're going to do that. The Mount Vernon Kid, Christopher Bennett. Fun episode tonight, Solo. As soon as MJF returned to the scumbag, I smiled and thought the wrestling gods gave Solo his wish. They did. They did indeed. Oz and Glorious, HBK, please sign Disco Garcia, Starks, and Daddy Magic. Joey Jojo Jr., with the $8. Brian Cage just did a tour of Australia. In my opinion, he was the most over guy on the card, which included Cardona and Nick Nemeth. Good to see him tonight. I think if he got pushed, he would get over well. Cage is very talented, especially for a guy as big as he is. The things he can do is very impressive. And they've just never given him any kind of serious push. You know, I know he's been injured a few times. That could be part of the reason why. No one's doubting his talent. I just don't think that Tony Khan is ever going to push him at a high level. Christopher Bennett. So, initial thought of Hangman's new theme. I like it. Has brooding outlaw vibes and really love that Hangman isn't putting up with the Bucks bullshit. Yeah, I didn't hear enough of the song to judge whether I really like it or not, but it definitely has like a brooding feel to it. Food Hive. The Macho Man brought his wife into the wrestling business, and now she's not my wife no more. Please explain this story to me, please. Plus, 9 days. 9 days! No, the Macho Man was married to Elizabeth before he even got into WWE. And by the time his run there was over, they were divorced. And so I think it was, I don't know who it was. I think it was Lance Storm who told the story. I don't know if Savage told this to Lance Storm. Somebody wanted to bring their wife in for a wrestling angle. And I think he was just giving them advice. He was saying, when I got into wrestling, I had a wife. And now I got no wife. Basically, the advice was keep your wife out of the wrestling business, because if you bring her in, it is very likely that you will no longer be married, which is actually very good advice. I mean, for God's sakes, Kevin Sullivan booked his wife in an angle where, you know, he put his wife with Chris Benoit and they ended up getting married in real life. He booked his own divorce and didn't even know it. I think Macho Man knows what he's talking about. Nash DTV. I know I'm in the minority. I absolutely hate the idea of wasting a Bryan Danielson match on Nigel McGuinness. Wasting a Bryan Danielson match on Nigel McGuinness? Tell me that you were not a fan of Nigel McGuinness or saw any of his matches without actually telling me that you were not a fan of Nigel McGuinness and never saw any of his matches. Nigel McGuinness was at one time a fantastic wrestler, and I know that was many, many years ago. But it's precisely why they need to do the match now. If he has any intention of ever wrestling again, it would be now. It would be against Bryan Danielson. And Wembley is the perfect place for it. That's why it has to happen. I don't look at it as a waste at all. It's the best built match in AEW. Nigel's been healing on this guy for over a year. All he needs to do is say, hey, I'm ready to go. And I'm sure Danielson would love to get in there and work with him. Cripple Punk 91. I don't have anything to say except I really enjoy watching your content. Thanks for doing all of this. Cripple Punk, that is very nice of you to say, and I thank you for the $20. And I'm even better on nights where I don't have some weird flying creature that is buzzing around my head and buzzing in my ear and has me looking around like I'm Damien Demento here, but... Oh, there he is. You know, he'd be dead already if I could actually get up and kill him, but I got a show to do here. Boots. Goldberg's first move will likely be the spear. So if you wear a steel plate underneath your sound-off shirt, Goldberg will knock himself out and hopefully fall off the scaffold. Do it for Brett. Well, as I booked the other night in Be the Booker, it was myself against Bill Goldberg in a scaffold match. And I can assure you here, we are now 24 hours removed from Brett's birthday. I will do it for Brett. I will. I will do it for the Hitman. And all of those great matches that we could have had with him that we never got to see. Bret Hart against Kurt Angle, Bret Hart against Shawn Michaels again, Bret Hart against John Cena, Bret Hart against Randy Orton. So sad. So depressing. Chris Manson, Britt versus Mercedes will be her story. Very funny. Very funny. You're a riot. Justin Hesse, Dutch choked a kitten. The Shield is forever. Do you realize that is the one scene that I've never actually watched in the show? Hey, Kieran, thank you for the sub. Kieran Payton, welcome Kieran to the channel. The Shield is one of my all-time favorite television shows. That's the one scene I've never watched. And I knew it as soon as he was... Like, I knew as soon as he grabbed the cat, like, I knew something bad was about to happen. Just based on everything that happened to him in that episode. And I muted it, and I just looked away, and I never... Even when I went back and I rewatched the series a few years ago, I never watched it. I never watched that scene. Can't do it. M. Mills, thank you for the 12. Heard from M. Mills last night, I think, on TNT as well. Thank you, M. Mills. Arby says, I am sad now. Why are you sad? You were happy before. Why are you sad now? Groovy Goose, Learning Tree versus Mitch the Potted Plant for Blood and Guts. Y2Ken, thank you for the... $12 learning tree. The Juliet with the 7. I always hope for thunderstorms this time of year because of idiots in the neighborhood setting off fireworks. Oh, what I wouldn't give for a massive thunderstorm tomorrow. We can always hope. Plus, my car is all full of tree sap, so it could use a good rain. I would love that. That would be great. The only problem is all the idiots who went out to buy all these ridiculous fireworks. I'm not talking about, like, like, okay, I don't know if you can hear that. They're setting them off right now. I'm talking about the ones that go out there and buy the illegal shit, the loud stuff, that just nonstop. Nothing would make me happier than if we had like four straight days of just nonstop soaking rain. But when the rain goes away, they're going to set the fireworks off anyway, so it doesn't matter. They're going to use them no matter what. Matt McClure, what's with Swerve not on after every defense? Well, tonight it made sense. There was no role for him on the show. We'll find out next week who his opponent is going to be at Wembley Stadium, but I have no explanation, no good explanation for why it happened the first time. That I can't answer. Aaron says, as a Buffalo native, I want to see Garcia beat the shit out of MJF. That's right, Daniel Garcia is a Buffalo guy. Cripple Punk, happy early make my anxiety and PTSD worst day. I truly want you and the chat to have a good weekend regardless. Well, I want you to have a good 4th of July weekend as well, even if you just curl up in the fetal position. Enjoy the weekend anyway. The Juliet, makes sense that Willow went over Statlander since Maria May, he says. Maria May. Is technically supposed to still be a heel. Yes, technically, but that doesn't mean that she is. Technically, though, yes, you are correct. Aaron with the 10. MJF against Garcia can be great. I'm biased because I'm a Buffalonian. Is that what you call yourself? Is that a real word? So people from Buffalo... How did I not know that? So you're called a Buffalonian. Why does that sound so ridiculous to me? But then again, I guess what else would you call them, right? You're not going to call them like a Buffaloite. A Buffalo... Okay. I want a Garcia push bad, and it seems like we're finally getting it. Danny is a star in the making. Let's go Buffalo, and let's go Danny. Buffalonian. I didn't know that. Retro KOH, hey Siri. Oh, you bastard. tell me something funny. Yeah, okay. Justin Hesse, I am the learning... No, I am the turning...
Do you feel him, sir?
No. I am the turning yeet. Tanks fries? I think your brain is fried, Justin. Are you okay? I'm starting to get worried about some of you guys. Base Beerus with the 25. I literally just watched a car chase end in a crash here on the Upper West Side, right into the doors of a bank. I literally walked past that very spot 2 minutes before it occurred. It's probably going to be on the news. Scary. That is very scary. And I'm glad that you're okay. You know, out on the island, if you're familiar with Nassau County and Long Island, the other day, I think it was in Deer Park, by the Tanger Outlets, there was a guy, he was drunk, and he drove into some of the store. I think he drove into a nail salon, and he killed 4 people and injured a whole bunch of others because he was a drunken fucking idiot. And I think he was injured, but not severely. It always seems to work out that way. It's weird because I've actually read, I guess there's some science to it, that the reason you will often hear about stories of drunk drivers who will be in an accident and they kill somebody, but the driver gets out unharmed. Apparently there's some science behind it where I guess when you're drunk, it has something to do with the chemicals in your bloodstream or something, and it like relaxes your body. And I guess in that way, it makes you less susceptible to injuries. There's some weird science to it, but it's just so wrong. You know, you hear about that stuff and, you know, somebody gets killed through no fault of their own, and then the other guy just walks away and you ask why, and there's no good answer for it. Base Beerus also says the driver ran out with a bag under his arm and fled. The Juliet, maybe Taz recruits two friends of his to put the learning tree through a table. What two friends did you have in mind? Cassidy grooms Love Dynamite tonight, and you do a fantastic job every week. Cassidy, thank you. I try. Dynamite, it's up, it's down, it's good, it's bad. I try to be consistent every week. Yee, what's worse, Triple H's Reign of Terror or Jericho's Learning Tree? Triple H's Reign of Terror. We're still in the early phases of the Learning Tree. The Reign of Terror went on for many, many months. Base Beerus, here for the stream. Derek J. Speaks. Hangman agrees to Blood and Guts once Swerve joins Team AEW. I like the way you think. If he's that obsessed with Swerve, I think that would make sense. That he would change his mind. The Real CS. Apparently, Daniel Garcia's contract is either up in the spring or has already, or he has already signed a new deal. He's a great talent, but that's probably why he's getting a push. Yeah, I did see something about that, that he, whether he has signed already or he will, I don't see him going anywhere. There's no reason for him to go anywhere. Jeremy Rose, do you think Danielson's run in AEW is lackluster since he never won a title? No. I don't judge whether someone's run was lackluster or not based on whether or not they won a title. Especially if you're somebody who is basically a living legend at this point. This man has won championships everywhere else. This man has been a top star for many years. This man is winding down his career. It would be nice to see him maybe at some point if he would have won the title. He didn't. I think that's fine. It does not make his run any less than because he didn't win a world title. Think of the matches that this man has had during this run. The Iron Man match with Hangman Page. Right? That's basically what it was. They had an Iron Man match on TV. The Iron Man match with MJF. The matches with Okada, although I guess one of them was in New Japan, technically. But the matches with Okada. The match with Will Ospreay at Dynasty. The matches with the other members of the Blackpool Combat Club. The match tonight with Pac. The match with Shingo. Every fucking match that he has. How can I sit here and call this man's run lackluster? He's put together an incredible body of work. And he's selfless enough that he's not lobbying or politicking to win a championship because he knows he doesn't fucking have to. You know, because he's not a mark. That's why I respect Bryan Danielson. He does it for the love of the game. He loves this shit. He just wants to go out and wrestle. The Real CS, after years of start and stop pushes. Well, you didn't finish the sentence. Mike Witt, MJF against Ospreay is going to be fire. What is the actual point of this learning tree thing? Way to build young stars. Chris, hopefully Hook wins this feud. Yeah, I think he will. But, boy, they're taking a long time to get there. They've been feuding for, it feels like at least 3 months at this point. Maybe four. I'm just, you know, it's like, wrap this up. Drew McIncock, tomorrow, July 4th, is my birthday. Can I get a birthday shout out from the GOAT? I turned 25. Thanks, guys. Happy birthday to Drew McIncock turning 25 years old on the 4th of July. Born on the 4th of July. God, you know how many years it's been since I've seen that movie? With Tom Cruise. That was a depressing movie. That's what that was. Project Libertad had a weird dream today where Eddie Kingston had a street fight at WrestleMania against Bobby Lashley and lost in 5 minutes. I don't know that that's a dream so much as that might be a prediction for the future. If he went to WWE, that's basically how I feel it would work. He would probably lose to Bobby Lashley in 5 minutes. Amiibo Juice. Ever been stung by a wasp or a bee? No. I actually worry about that because I wonder if I'm allergic to a bee sting, and the only way to find out is to be stung by a bee. Never been stung by a bee or a wasp. Mike Witt, imagine Ricochet cost Will the match at All In. No, it's not going to happen. Retro KOH, buy or sell Siri or that buzzing insect? Oh, I'll take Siri. I'll take Siri. I've been awoken a couple of different times in my life by that buzzing sound. And it is the most unnerving thing. I woke up, there was a giant bee in my room. I'm not talking like a little bumblebee. Like, I'm talking like a fucking yellow jacket. I heard the buzzing. And I couldn't, I was like, because I just woke up. So I'm like half asleep. And I'm like, what is that coming? And I hear it. And then I open my eyes and I look up. And the window is right there, and it's like flapping by the blinds. It's making noise. It's just trying to get out. I'm like, holy shit. I was like, oh my God. Thank God for my hand vacuum. I don't know what I would do without it. You got the different hose attachments. Just take the biggest attachment you can. It's long. I don't have to get too close to it. And then you can just release it outside. I don't know what I would do without that thing. Bo's Wrench. Or Boz Wrench. Are you looking forward to Julia's debut in WWE? And do you think WWE will do right by her since Vince is no longer in power? I am looking forward to her debut, and I think she's going to do very well. I think she's going to have a dominant run. They're going to give her the Asuka push. That's my prediction. Mike Witt, who wins a match between Solo and The Fly tonight? Oh, I'll win. It's just, it might take a while. This might be an extended war if I don't get him tonight. See, the thing is, I don't think it's a fly. It's, I don't know what it is. It could be a mosquito. It's a little bit bigger than the usual mosquito. The problem is, he's going to bounce around from room to room. If I don't get him tonight, I'm going to wake up in the morning with bites all over me. I know it. So I'm not going to bed until I find him and I kill him. I will not go to bed tonight until I have murdered. That's my vow. Smell that? Death is in the air. Gold Matthew. Holy shit, what a show. My buddy Ziggly Mustache and I are going to Money in the Bank, our first PLE. After being a WWE fan from 04 to 10 and returning in 22, I am hyped. Well, have fun at Money in the Bank, because that's going to be a hot show this weekend in Toronto, of course, which is always a hot wrestling city. So I'm expecting a great show this weekend. Adam Casper, happy 4th of July, and everyone, happy 4th to you as well. Dynamite was very good, but the only thing is Chris should have won instead of Willow. We'll see how it plays out next week. I tend to agree with you. Eminem, do you see Camille and Hayter at All In or All Out? I'm going to book the Spider and you against JD and the Fly in a tag team match. Yeah, you know, on Tuesday Night Titans last night, we had a great show, over 3 hours, talking all kinds of stuff. And I look over, and all of a sudden, you know, JD is like backing away from the mic, and he's all flustered. He had a spider that ran across his desk, and then he had a second spider. So I don't know what kind of nest is over there in his place. But I'm like laughing, and I'm like, ah, oh, come on, you know, fucking Peter Parker over here, right? Yeah, well, that's what I get for laughing. Now I'm dealing with this shit. Serves me right. And Base Beerus, I remember being 10 years old watching HBK kick Hogan on Raw on the 4th of July. Do you have any favorite 4th of July memories? Not necessarily wrestling related. The SmackDown where Hogan and Edge won the tag team titles. I'm almost positive that was on July 4th back in 2002. And that was a great moment because Hogan came out to Real American that night, which is the all-time greatest wrestling theme of all time. So that's one of my fondest July 4th wrestling memories. As far as like just general July 4th memories, not really. Nothing in particular that I can think of. I don't think so. Solomonster the Flyman. Spiders are great. They kill ants and roaches. Well, I don't have ants. I have aunts and uncles. I don't have any ants that spiders need to kill. When I wake up in the morning and I look above at the ceiling and there's a spider, however tiny it may be, literally right above my head, it's got to die. I mean, that's it. You know? I mean, if you stay outside my boundaries, then we're cool. We can coexist. But the minute you get too close, so the minute you're in my headspace, or you're near my head or my face or something, that's it. I have a zero tolerance policy. I don't care. I don't care if it's a fly. I don't care if it's a spider. You know how many ladybugs I've killed? Like, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I said it. I don't give a shit. I have no tolerance for this. I have no tolerance for this. Whatsoever. This is the beginning of my villain origin story here. I'm going to get bit by some radioactive mosquito. And I'm gonna come on here for the stream next week. I'm going to morph into a mosquito. It's like a horror movie come to life here. Anyway, thank you for all of the super chats. You guys have blown me away tonight. We are currently sitting, we're so close to 500. So close to 500 likes. Hit that thumbs up. We only need 15 more to hit 500. I'm a monster. Hey, they call me the Solemn Monster. You should have seen it coming. Don't act surprised. You know what's great about that, too, when you kill him? There's a crunch. Anyway, I want to mention that there is an ongoing sale, speaking of July 4th, right now on ProWrestlingTees.com/SolemonsterSoundsOff. You can get 20% off all shirts in our Sound Off store, including, by the way, the GWO shirt is in there for our little Green World Order. So you can get 20% off. Just use the code AMERICA24. At checkout. Get your shirts, because the sale is over on July 5th. So don't waste any time. All right, let's go ahead and be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
Baxter Stockman. I'm going to turn into Baxter Stockman. Man, I haven't had a Baxter Stockman reference on here in a long time. Now you got me thinking of Baxter. You got me thinking of Krang. You got me thinking of, who was the big lizard guy? I forgot his name. Leatherface. It was Leatherface, right? In Ninja Turtles? All right, here we go. Be the Booker. You know how this works. We've been doing a lot of Be the Booker this week. We did it twice on Monday, because we had the Forbidden Door stream in the afternoon, and then we had Raw. You guys hit the goal both times. All right, we begin with Scissor Me Daddy. It's the Acclaim, the number one contenders for the AEW World Tag Team titles. I don't know when, but they have a title shot coming their way, maybe at Wembley. The Acclaimed. Oh, it's Leatherhead. What did I say? I said Leatherface. Yeah, of course, Bebop and Rocksteady. Rezar and Toka from Secret of the Ooze. Casey Jones. April O'Neil. Who else? Who am I missing? I know there's others. Oh, Shredder, obviously. It's the Acclaimed taking on the Fabulous Freebirds. Some combination of the Fabulous Freebirds. Buddy Roberts, Michael P.S. Hayes, and Bam Bam, Terry Gordy. You know, you could have Max Caster rapping on his way down to the ring while Michael Hayes sings Bad Street USA as the Freebirds make their entrance. Yes, I said Krang. Rat King. Oh, yeah, I forgot about Rat King. That's right. Yes, I know Rezar is one half of AOP. That's where they got the name from. I guarantee you that's where they got the name from. Please. All right, women's be the booker. We're off to a good start. Let's keep it going. Let's keep it going. We begin with Bird Girl. Lyra Valkyria. She is in the women's Money in the Bank match this weekend. She has a small chance, not a very good chance, but a small chance of winning. Lyra Valkyria taking on Dana Brooke. I always jinx it. Every time I have praise, oh yeah, we're off to a great start, and then we just run into a wall. When will I ever learn? Well, there could be no clean sweep, but that doesn't mean we can't book a hell of a main event, so let's keep our fingers crossed here. Oh, Napoleon Frog. That's right, Napoleon Frog. Guys are bringing back all these memories, man. Okay, men's be the booker. We begin with Matt Riddle, the original bro. Okay. So we know how we're starting here. It's going to be Matt Riddle in our main event of the evening. Going one-on-one with who? Who will it be? It will be The Rock says, I'm stealing your spot. Oh, no. Matt Riddle has been screwed by The Rock. Look at Dwayne. Dwayne couldn't be out of the spotlight for 5 seconds. He saw Matt Riddle is going to get a rare Be the Booker main event and said, I don't think so. And so The Rock has taken his spot. So now we will have to book again because The Rock is in the Be the Booker main event. It is very timely, isn't it? On the day that the WrestleMania documentary finally drops, months later, we land on The Rock. All right, well, it's the final boss against who? Look at you now, Riddle. Look at you now. Final boss Rock against... No! 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 The Rock just stole a spot from himself. You can't do that. What is wrong with you? The Rock has stolen a spot from himself. We have to book again. We may be in an infinite loop here. I don't know that we're ever going to finish this. It will be The Rock. I swear to God, if we land on him again, it will be The Rock against who? The British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith. And look who's behind him in the background. Somebody mentioned Andre before. There's Andre the Giant. That had to be one of his last appearances in WWE. Yeah, he was in pretty rough shape back then. This has to be 91. This has to be late 91. We actually had The Rock against the British Bulldog on SmackDown back in 99, but by that point, unfortunately, the Bulldog was just... The Bulldog was too far gone, unfortunately. Actually, they had a pay-per-view match, didn't they? At, like, No Mercy or something? Isn't that the match where he gave Bulldog a rock bottom into a tray of dog shit? Aren't you happy Vince McMahon is no longer in power anymore? Dog shit. Dog food. We don't realize fully, I think, how good we have it now compared to the way it was a few years ago. It's unbelievable, the difference. You go back to 2018, 2019, you compare it to now. What's the common denominator here? What's missing in this equation? Imagine all the great television we could have had that move happened a lot quicker. Pisses me off just thinking about it. We have to watch The Rock and the British Bulldog wrestle with a fucking plate of dog shit because the owner of the company has a scat fetish. Fucking guy. Hey, David Thiering, thank you for the $10 super chat. I wonder if this is your critic's way of getting back at you and JD by sending spiders and flies after you, both driving you insane. Just want to peek in and say, hey, have a good 4th. David, I hope you have a very happy 4th of July. David has been a presence on these streams now for several weeks, a few months, actually. And over on TNT, and I know on JD's channel as well, and a big supporter. So I'm wishing you a very happy 4th of July. And Mike Witt, are you still training for your scaffold match with Goldberg? That Iron Man match between Powers of Pain and the Head Shrinkers is going to be awesome. Your definition of awesome is very different than my definition of awesome. Chris Manson. Look at Chris, man. Chris has got the green skull. You know how rare that is? We don't have, I think, a lot of people that have green skulls here on this channel, but he's been a channel member for 38 months. He's a legend. Do you think one has to be the heel for Mariah versus Tony? I don't think so. I think the fans are going to make up their mind about who they want to root for. You know, they might root equally for both of them. I tend to think Mariah May is going to be the more over of the two in Wembley, and the one who they're going to want to see walk away with that championship, in part because Tony has had it for so long. I mean, when did Tony Storm win that title? Was it Full Gear? I mean, she's had that title, it feels like, almost a year at this point. It's probably only a few months away. But no, I don't think one has to be. Gold Matthew, thank you for the $5 super chat. No blood at Forbidden Door. Solo, you're running a female promotion. Which current / past wrestler do you pick to be your golden goose? Mine is Tony Storm. So I'm like the new Rossi Ogawa, is what you're saying? I'm going to run my own Marigold. So I can pick any woman, past or present, to be my crown jewel of my promotion. Boy, you know, it's hard to vote against Trish Stratus. She had everything. You know, she's just beautiful. She got really good and turned into a really good wrestler so she can work. I mean, look at the cage match, that last match she had with Becky. You know, blew people away. I think I might go with Trish, honestly. I want somebody who isn't just a great wrestler, but someone who would have that extra appeal. Someone who would have that extra something. I could take that person and they could be the face of my company and I could put them out there and put them on the cover of everything, front and center, right? That would be Trish. That would be Trish Stratus. I see a lot of votes here for Rhea Ripley. Rhea is very popular. But yeah, you can never go wrong with Trish Stratus. I mean, come on. Even after all these years, she's still got it. Where does Jamie Hayter fit into all this? She doesn't. She's not ready to come back. I mean, look, we had no idea what Britt Baker had gone through. We have no idea what Jamie Hayter is going through. Evidently, her injury or injuries was a lot more serious than any of us expected. And so my only hope is that she can come back at 100%. Doesn't feel to me like that's going to happen in time for All In. I would love for her to have a spot on that Wembley show, but does it really feel like she's on her way back? Doesn't feel like that to me. I'd love to be wrong about that. Mike with the $2. Think Jimmy shows up on Saturday? I thought there was a chance Jimmy was going to show up at Madison Square Garden last week. I think that Jimmy... No, I don't. I don't, because I think that if the plan is Cody and Solo at SummerSlam, I think Solo pins Cody. If the Bloodline is winning, I don't know what the point of Jimmy showing up would be, unless he's going to cost them the match. I wouldn't be surprised if Jimmy comes back the same night that Heyman and Roman do. First Jimmy, then Heyman pops out, and then the music hits, and here comes Roman Reigns. I'm going to say SummerSlam for Jimmy. Darth, no, I don't upload the full shows to YouTube. The full podcasts are up on all of the audio platforms. That is where you can find them. And then certain clips will hit the YouTube channel, but for a lot of the segments, a lot of the things I talk about, and some of the mailbag stuff, you gotta download the full show. It's the way it works. Yeah, Andre says Jamie is radio silent. She hasn't tweeted or posted anything since she went down with the injury, so it's been over a year. She just went off the grid completely. So that's why nobody knows anything. You know, there's no update on her. There's no update from her. I assume she's alive. I would assume Tony Khan would have told us by now if she wasn't. So that's about all we know. But yeah, as far as Jimmy goes, I'll say SummerSlam. But before we get to SummerSlam, just to give one more quick plug here, we have Money in the Bank. And I am going to be live not only after SmackDown on Friday, but also after Money in the Bank on Saturday. So you can find the review live here on the channel. Don't forget, Money in the Bank has a two-hour pre-show. I have no idea why. They don't even have a match announced for the pre-show. What the hell do you need 2 hours for? But 5 o'clock Eastern time, pre-show starts. The actual PLE starts at 7, not 8, so just be aware of that. Which I actually like, because that means I get to go live earlier. I'll probably be live on the channel by no later than 10:30. Like I am for Dynamite, usually. So I like that. It's a nice change of pace from the AEW pay-per-views. So yeah, we have SmackDown on Friday night. We have Money in the Bank on Saturday. Sound Off episode 869 is coming up on Sunday. And then we have Raw live stream here on Monday night. Another episode of Tuesday Night Titans with myself and JD on his channel on Tuesday. We have Dynamite next Wednesday, which is a big show. And probably not going to be here for SmackDown that Friday. But that's next week. We'll worry about that next week. Right now, you got me for a while. Thank you, Sam. Sam says the Sound Off is always a great listen. That means a lot. Thank you. Got a two-hour episode, if you missed it. It's up right now at 8:68. Devin from New Jersey. Did Solo see Punk and Bryan as future world champions when they first came to WWE? I think Punk, I may have had that sense about Punk that he could be. I just didn't think Bryan was going to get the shot. I was a big fan of Bryan's from his Ring of Honor days, so I knew what kind of wrestler he was. I just don't think I actually expected that Vince McMahon would ever see him in that way. So, Brian, no. Punk, I think I had a sense that he might be. And Uffman, what about Hayter showing up at Wembley after the Storm and Mariah match to stare down the winner? I think that'd be great. They can find a way to get her on the show. If they think that she's close enough to getting cleared by then why not? Imagine the reaction when they hit her music. Guys, have a very happy and safe 4th of July, however you may be celebrating. Enjoy your hot dogs and hamburgers if you are having them. And thank you for all the love. And I will see you back here on Friday night. In Toronto, SmackDown is going to be at the Scotiabank Arena. They're going to be there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for NXT Heatwave. I'll see you on Friday night for SmackDown. Until then. Happy 4th.